In a few moments we'll start the Dhamma talk hour. And because we're doing live streaming internationally now, I'm going to try and aim for slightly shorter talks, maybe 45, 50 minutes, so we can give more opportunities for questions, especially when they come from overseas. So it'll be a bit shorter this time. But first of all, please, if everyone can come in who's sitting outside or standing outside. Again, there's lots of space in the front. And the subject of the talk is another suggestion which was sent to me on the internet. But please, if we can stop more suggestions on the internet, because you've got enough suggestions now for talks for the next year. So, maybe stop it for at least a month or so. But I value that because it makes it possible to give talks, you know, for people which are relevant. And the topic which, the first one which came through, was they wanted me to talk on the Buddhist idea of karma, but how we can understand that, not just through belief, but through some experience or some deeper understanding. Because the problem with, you know, modern life, you know, we're asked to believe in so many things, and sometimes what we're asked to believe in doesn't make much sense. And you know, you may say the same with the law of karma. Just do we have to believe in that, or you know, what? If it's something we just have to believe in, then you know, you're not going to get involved in such things because beliefs are very uncertain. But you know, can we really understand it much more deeper without the need just to rely upon belief? And of course, the first thing I always like to impress with this law of karma is, you know, the usual simplistic idea that karma means if you punch your mother when you were young, you're going to have, you know, hay fever in your nose for the rest of your life. Or, you know, that simplistic idea is that, you know, whatever you're experiencing now, it means because you've done something similar to somebody else in the past. That idea of, like, action and punishment is something which doesn't never make sense to me at all. So don't even just not believe in that, reject that, because that is far too naive and simplistic. And in fact, you know, when we try and find out why this is happening to me, what did I do, or why does this always happen to me, is this some karma I did in the past, it's not very helpful, because you can't work out why these things are happening to you. Actually, you probably find out they happen to me as well and to the person sitting next to you. This is just the nature of life. These things happen. So you've seen that on the back of the posters. There's a lot of wisdom you see when you're driving down the freeway on the back of other people's cars. You know, the shit happens. But it mostly comes from assholes, as they say. But yeah, it happens, and we've all got an arsehole, haven't we? There's all a part of us which is nasty and mean sometimes, but just thinking about that, it doesn't really help. It may, for some people, think, oh, why this happens is because, oh, I must have done something bad in the past. That gets very negative and gets into this thing about being bad. And so it gets into the guilt trips, and that's something which I've, you know, tried to get out of my life and tried to encourage other people to get rid of. I'm going to say another story which is very similar, which you've heard before, but which I'm going to bring back into this whole idea of karma and about what happens when you think you've got some trouble or difficulty. And that was every time, you know, I went to the doctor, I felt guilty. Years and years and years ago, I had, I think, some sort of sickness. I never found out exactly why. It's about over 20 years ago now, the last time I was really sick. And I went to the doctors, and I was sitting there in the doctor's surgery in Byford waiting for the doctor to call me in. And somebody who knew me came into the doctor's surgery, and they saw me, this monk who meditates, who lives a nice, peaceful lifestyle, who doesn't get involved in the stresses of normal life. And they looked at me and they said, "I never expected to see you in here." And I felt really guilty. Maybe I wasn't eating enough brown rice. Maybe I wasn't exercising. Well, I'm supposed to be a monk. I'm supposed to be healthy, living a good lifestyle. And it made me feel guilty about being in a doctor's surgery. Okay, if I was in a pub or a brothel or something, then I should feel guilty. But what's wrong with being in a sort of a doctor's surgery? And it's part of life. And that was the situation, the incident, where I started to teach people, look, there is nothing wrong with being sick. And to make that point, I've done this exercise in all these talks I've been given, asking people, can you please put your hand up right now if you've never been sick in your life, not once been sick. Is there anybody right now who's never been sick in their life so far? And you may not see this on the internet, but there's not one person, this crowd of about 300, has got their hand up. The reason is because you've all been sick in life. And imagine if you'd never been sick. You've been a human being, and all these years you've lived, you've never had a day's sickness in your life. You would be weird. You'd be so strange that the medical establishment would get you into their universities and do all sorts of tests on you. What's wrong with you? You haven't been sick. So the point of that simile is that sickness is natural. Sickness is ordinary. In fact, there must be something right with you. You're sick again. And I've been teaching that for such a long time. There are many doctors here in Perth who come and tell me, yes, somebody came into our surgery today and they said, "Doctor, there's something right with me. I'm sick again." It must be one of your disciples, Ajahn Brahm. But look, the reason why we do that, we say, "Doctor, there's something right with me. I'm sick," is to take this negativity away from the difficulties and problems of life. There's nothing wrong with being sick. There's nothing wrong with having a problem in life. But if we think it's something wrong that I'm being punished for a bad thing I did, and that's karma, no, no, no. It's not a punishment thing. It's not that something's wrong. This is part of human life. You'll be sick sometimes, even if you do eat brown rice, if you are totally vegetarian, if you exercise and you eat. How many vegetables are you supposed to eat every day? And pieces of fruit? 5 vegetables. Even if you eat 6 vegetables every day, you can still get sick. So the point is, there's nothing wrong with being sick. Even if you're a really, really, really good wife, you do all the right things, still your husband argues with you. If you bring up your kids and do all the right things, still they drive you crazy. So is there something wrong with your kids? Is there something wrong with youth today? There is nothing wrong with youth today. That's what they're like. That's what marriage is like. There's nothing wrong with your marriage. Even if you're getting divorced this weekend. This is part of life. So we don't say there's something wrong with me, lawyer, I'm getting divorced today. There's something right with me, I'm getting divorced. So what we're doing there is we're accepting these things are part of life. When we say there's something wrong, our marriage is broken up, what happens? Guilt, anger, blame, fighting. And those are the things which I'm trying to sort of dismantle, take away from life. No guilt, no anger. To say that this is happening to me right now, this is part of life. no more than there's something wrong with me. I'm sick again, doctor. There's something right with me. I'm sick. There's something right with me. There's a problem in my life. There's something right with me. There's a difficulty in my finances. So this is taking that law of karma and seeing it in a far deeper, much better way. Not that we're blaming ourselves because something bad we did in the past. Yeah, it's got its causes. But the point is, when we say there's something right with me, I'm having a problem in my life, it takes away the guilt, it takes away the anger. And why is it right? Because when it's right, it gives you the opportunity, embracing it, learning from it, growing from it. The other karma simile, which is a very important one, it was so important that the book, which I just saw the Buddhist Society in the Korean edition. I just got a $5,000 check this week from the Korean edition of Open the Door of Your Heart. You're making a fortune out of me. But in the American edition of that book, it was called Who Ordered This Truckload of Dung? Instead of Open the Door of Your Heart, it had a different title, which is important because it means that people buy both books, not realizing they're the same. Excellent marketing. But it doesn't matter, it's all good charity work. But that simile on the front of that book was just suggesting that these things which happen to us in life, yeah, there's something right with me, I've got more dung now. I've got more shit. I've got more to learn from, to grow from. And this is one of the most important things about the law of karma. When you're having a good time, marvelous, enjoy it. There's nothing wrong with enjoying yourself and being happy. Even last week, somebody came to the monastery in Serpentine and I had to spend a long time counseling them because there was nothing going wrong in their life. They're having a wonderful life and they felt so guilty. They felt so bad. They were just having a wonderful relationship, a nice job, plenty of money, good health, enjoying themselves in a peaceful country. They felt so bad about that. Come on. I've been working hard to get you into that stage, and now you get there. You're having a good life, and everything is going well, and then you still complain. And so I said, look, it's all right to be happy. And in fact, some years ago, I was counseling another person having a very good time, but they felt guilty about it. So on our monastery letterhead, nice letterhead, Bodhinyana Monastery Serpentine, I typed out a letter and I signed it, and it was a license. I said, this is a happiness license. I, Ajahn Brahm, spiritual director of the Buddhist Society of Western Australia, hereby grant you permission to be happy. And I signed that for them. So they can put it on their wall and they can remind themselves, actually, there's nothing wrong with being happy. Don't feel guilty about that. So the happiness is karma or something, whatever, here it is. Enjoy it. Have fun with it. Don't worry about it. And if you can enjoy that happiness, then you may be also be able to say the same thing about giving yourself permission to have a problem as well. There's nothing wrong with that either. Both are this wonderful thing called life. They're part of life, so we love the whole lot. Having happiness, great. When you're having difficulty, learn from it, grow from it. It is shit, it smells, it stinks. That's what some people think. But it's great for your fertilizer, for your garden. We have a big compost pile in our monastery. All the excess food, which doesn't get eaten, we put it in that compost pile and we get some manure from the prison farm up the road and we dig it in there. And some of these, people, they love getting in the compost and digging all this shit up. They stink for days, but they love it. So there must be something about shit which is quite lovable and adorable. And they love it because they know that that's going to make this beautiful gardens. And that was the whole point of that truckload of dung simile. that when things actually happen in life, instead of blaming, oh, it's my karma, I've been a terrible thing, stupid me, why did I do this? And getting depressed. In other words, getting guilt and shoving it all on yourself. Or the other one, getting angry and bitter. It's his fault. It's her fault. It's the government's fault. It's the system's fault. Down with the system. No, that's not part of Buddhism. We don't believe in suicide bombers. Actually, there's a joke about suicide bombers. In a suicide bomber training camp, somewhere in the sort of the Middle East, on the last lesson, the instructor got all this sort of the potential suicide bombers together and said, I'm now going to demonstrate the suicide vest. And please listen carefully, because I'm only going to tell you this once. Anyway, if you don't understand, ask the person who laughs sitting next to you. You can only do a practical demonstration once, okay? Anyway, back to the story about I've just got lost in my jokes. But yeah, back to the story about the shit, the difficulties in life. Instead of just getting angry at yourself or angry at others, which causes all this violence in this world, we accept this and the real law of karma, the one you don't have to have faith in, you don't have to believe in, the one you can try out, and my goodness, it really works. So here I am with this difficult problem. It's shitty, it's difficult, but what can I do about it? What can I do with it? And you find out, once you embrace the problems in life and the happiness in life, embrace both, this is life, enjoy the problems and work with the difficulties. Dig them in, make something happen. And you'll find that the difficulties and problems in life, that is where you really, really grow and become this incredibly powerful, wise, compassionate being. And it's not just for others, it's for yourself as well. It's the shit which grows the flowers and which gives the sweetness to the fruit and gives all the scent, you know, in a garden. That's what happens. So, the law of karma means, what am I doing with what I've got? And the other nice thing about the law of karma, which I've been really pushing recently, is, where is karma made? The whole idea of karma is a cause and effect. It gives you a sense of control. Especially your past, you can't do much about your past. It's finished with, it's done, you all know that. But your future lies ahead of you. And you've got this whole vista of possibilities. Now some of you think, oh, not me. I can't do this. I've stuffed up all my life. I'm going to stuff up again. That is not the law of karma. The law of karma is, here I am. Come to this particular spot. And the law of karma means you can make anything out of what you've got. Out of shit you can make a garden. Out of happiness you can make so many other people happy. Whatever you have to deal with, the future is totally open to you. When I realized that, I realized that, my goodness, I am not restricted or limited at all. The possibilities of your life are totally open and free. And sometimes I've collected stories of amazing things which happen to people. One of these stories that I was talking about to some of the monks earlier, about a week or two ago, because there was this story of this young guy who was, you know, run away when he was very, very young. And it reminded me of this story which I read in a newspaper or magazine about this little kid in Los Angeles who ran away when he was only 5 years of age. And he ran away because he was being sort of hurt by his friends, and he'd beaten by the people supposed to be looking after him. He ran away and he lived on the streets of Los Angeles from the time he was 5 years of age. Now, he was a survivor, and obviously to survive, you know, he had to get into petty crime And he went into some juvenile detention many times. And one thing led to another. He became a career criminal. You know, in and out of jail, petty crimes. And the event which totally turned his life around, he was at the end of one sentence in one of the terrible prisons in California. And he had a case officer who was, you know, preparing him for his parole, trying to find him a job. You know, what sort of job can you get to a person who's been in and out of jail for such a long time? Sometimes it's not, you can understand why, you know, 5 years of age, no sort of family to look after him. And he survived. But anyway, that his case officer was trying to find a job for him, and she knew a friend, and this was Los Angeles, who was trying to make a movie. And it was like most of these movies, this director was not, or producer was not well known at the time, and he wanted to make a movie, gangster movie, but they wanted to make it authentic. So that she talked this producer into hiring this guy as a consultant about how real gangsters speak. You know, that was one thing he really knew. He'd been a gangster all his life, lived on the street, so he knew the language, authentic. So he was released from jail, and he advised in this movie about the language of gangsters. The producer was quite impressed with him and actually gave him a part in the movie. The director was called Quentin Tarantino. It was his first big break, Reservoir Dogs. Apparently a very violent movie. I've never seen it, obviously, but this guy came out of prison, made a few million dollars out of that movie, and about 6 months after he was released from jail, was living in Malibu in this big mansion, and he married this beautiful parole officer. And he said he can't believe it. Sort of 6 months ago, he was in jail with absolutely nothing. Now he's a millionaire living with other film stars with a beautiful wife. And he said just how life can turn around so quickly. He was obviously in the right place at the right time, but he made use of, you know, what he knew. And I kind of like that story, because that was actually showing just how, you know, your career, your life can just turn on a dime, as they say. You just don't know what's going to happen next. You can't predict it. Amazing things happen in life. So, that is why the law of karma means keep all options open. You can do anything with what you've got right now. And the point is, because it's possible, that's why you do the very best you can. There's no such thing as hopelessness. Incredibly powerful, positive. You can do anything. So where do you do your karma? Right now. This is the place your future is being made. And the problem with most people, they worry about the future. They're anxious about it. They go to fortune tellers trying to predict the future. And while they're going to a fortune teller, while they're being anxious, while they're worrying about the future, they're not doing anything about their future. Which is why we keep stuffing up. So what I understand about the law of karma is karma is what I am doing right now about my future. So what can I do about my future? I can right now, as a monk, be peaceful, be kind, be compassionate, be caring, you know, be friendly, be soft, get rid of all this negativity, which, you know, that's going to create a terrible future for myself if I'm negative, blaming and sort of angry at people. If I keep thinking, why do I always have to come and give a talk on a Friday night? Why do I have to work during the holidays? Everybody else is having time off. Every time since I landed on Christmas Eve, I've been working every day answering people's problems. Why me? Moan, moan, moan. People can do that. Why can't I retire? I'm over 60 now. I've worked long enough as a monk. But I'm going to have to keep working till I'm 70, till I'm 80. That's when life really starts for a holy person. So, it's very easy to moan, isn't it? Get negative. And I can do negativity if you really want to, but no, I'm not going to ruin my present moment and my future by looking at it with these dark glasses. So instead, I realize that I am making my future right now. If I want to have a happy future, if I'm going to have a happy weekend, the weekend starts now, right now, in this moment. So I'm going to be peaceful, I'm going to be kind, compassionate. Compassion is a beautiful thing, because once you start it now, it's like a fire, like one of these wildfires, it takes off. You know, all these bushfires you see in Australia start from a little spark. One little spark of kindness, and it takes off, this whole bushfire, inflammation of kindness in society. You know, now this bushfire is international, a bushfire of compassion spreading, and being kind to yourself, being kind to others, being forgiving for goodness sake. Why am I going to destroy my future by carrying around the pain of the past? I'm not going to do that. Right now, in this moment, this is the time I'm going to let go and forgive. Right now, this is the only time I've got all that shit of the past. Bye-bye. Down the toilet where it belongs. Flush. Gurgle, gurgle. Bye-bye. To be free. And I do this right now, because now is the place my future is being made. That's karma. Karma means work. It's making things happen. You don't make things happen tomorrow or next week. Now, and understanding the power of that, this is the time you're transformed. This is the time you let go. This is the time you're free. And once you're free, once you walk out of jail, you're out of jail forever. So get out of jail tonight, right now, at 27 minutes past 8, Western Standard Time. Now, when you learn how to do this, now that is karma. And if you try that, you know that works. Your future gets happier and happier. And it's also, a problem comes, great. Shit, let's learn from this. So whatever happens in your life, whatever occurs to you, instead of saying there's something wrong and getting negative, there's something right with me. I've got a problem again. There's something right with me. I have to come and give a talk on another Friday night. There's something right with me. Someone's coming to ask me this counselling. There's something right with me. After the talk, people line up. Ajahn Brahm, could you please help on my marriage? I said, why me? I've become a monk. I've never been married. Why do you ask me these silly questions? He said, come on, I don't mind. So that way, whatever, that's actually how I learn. Listen to all your problems. You know, I learn much more about marriage than if I ever got married. You know, without the suffering and the pain. So you learn a lot that way. So this way, whatever happens to you in your life, you accept. So be wary. The next time you use the word wrong, stop and say, no, there's something right. I made a mistake. That's the other thing, making mistakes in life. How many of you have never made a mistake? The only people who say they've never made a mistake are either liars or they're demented, they've forgotten. We've all made mistakes in life. What happens when you make a mistake? When you do something really stupid? Do you feel embarrassed? No, when you make a mistake, something right, you're a human being. And isn't that wonderful? That when you make a mistake and other people make a mistake, you think, wow, they're the same as me. Isn't that great? We're allowed to make mistakes. That takes away a lot of guilt and, more importantly, fear. The work, if you make a mistake, what happens to you? Get told off, you lose your job. Not in Bodhinyana Monastery where I live. When people make a mistake, well done, you made a mistake, you're human. That's actually why the place is a mess. Too many monks speak. It's not a mess, it's a very happy place. But it could be cleaner, it could be more painted, it could be this. And a lot of people always give us, you know, advice on just how to make the compost this way and make this that way and that way. But, you know, look, the thing which I'm most proud about and I am proud about the monasteries which we have here in the Buddhist society here. The thing I'm most proud about this place is that people feel welcome. And you don't have to be perfect. You don't have to sit like Buddhists in the correct posture. Oh, stop it. You know, as soon as I mention posture, a few people, you know, started to lean up. No, just why you feel so guilty about not being in the right posture? They don't bow. Please, if you don't want to bow, don't bow. Don't feel guilty about it. There's nothing wrong with not bowing. There's nothing wrong with whatever you do. There's nothing wrong with the kids sort of crying. There was one time here, I'll never forget this, there was a lady over in the corner there, fell asleep during one of my talks and started snoring. Is there something wrong about that? And actually, the thing which was a mistake was when somebody tried to wake her up. And I told her afterwards that that woman, because you know, she told me that she was one of these unfortunate victims of domestic abuse. And she was so afraid in her house. You know, she was not sleeping. So tense. And she came here, in this room here. And this was the first place in weeks where she felt safe. And I thought, that's great. It's not just the talks, it's the atmosphere you create here. That's even more important than whatever we say. The fact that she could feel safe here, and she could lay down, and she could actually fall asleep. I thought, wow, what a great achievement of the Buddhist Society of Western Australia. That you could give that feeling of safety and kindness, and she could fall asleep. And somebody woke her up. That was a mistake. Never do that again. Let her sleep. She needed it. Now that is what I call like making good karma. There's nothing wrong. And if you think there's something wrong, you disturb a person who really needs to sleep. Sometimes you make what people call mistakes. And how many times have you been told off? What did I do wrong? I was just, okay, I just made an error, made a slip, but that's who I am. And it's so nice to be actually accepted and loved and realize, no, you haven't made anything wrong. You made a mistake. There's nothing wrong with making a mistake. So number one, we don't hide our mistakes. We face up to them and learn from them. We don't think, no, that wasn't me. I didn't do that. How many times we got this thing in our monastery when something goes wrong or something goes missing, we blame the kangaroos. Those kangaroos again, they've stolen my cloth. They take it. You know, that's why they've got these big pockets, you know. That's what happens. You should look in those pockets sometimes. Actually, no, there was a time years ago. You know your shoes you leave outside. You know the advice we always give you. You bring shoes to a Buddhist temple. Don't bring expensive designer shoes. Because somebody is going to look at theirs and look at yours and think, no, I'll take yours. But there was a time here when people were losing shoes, but it was really weird. It was only one shoe of the pair. And this was happening for weeks. It's a true story. We wondered what was going on. Was it a one-legged man? We're looking at all the people, one leg coming in here. And then we found out the answer. You know, it was actually the dog next door. You were in here, and the dog was coming. He had some fetish for shoes. Because the owner looked in its kennel, and the kennel was half full of shoes from you people. The dog had just snuck up, taken a shoe back every Friday night, and after a couple of months of that, had a kennel full of shoes. So, was that wrong? No, it's just that the dog was a bit screwed up, I don't know, but it's just a dog being a dog, collecting things. You know, you collect things, dogs collect things, but you can't. Can you blame the dog? There's nothing wrong. It's just a dog being a weird. That's all. No human. You guys are weird. So I don't see why dogs can't be weird. But what we're actually doing there is realizing that yeah, it's okay to make mistakes. And the psychology of that is actually people make less mistakes when they're allowed to. When you're so terrified of making a mistake, we call it walking on eggshells. When you walk in the exhales, you're not relaxed. You can't perform to your highest. And that is why people make so many mistakes. So look, and I know I said this before, that sometimes that the Buddhist Society of Western Australia on a Friday night is the best singles club in Western Australia. People come up to find somebody to date. But if you are sort of going out with a person, please tell each other, look, you know, girlfriend, boyfriend, you're allowed to make a mistake. Tell them that from the beginning so they can relax, okay? And when you relax, you have a much better time together and you can be yourself. When you're so uptight and don't want to make a mistake, you don't want to say the wrong thing, do the wrong thing, that's just such a terrible time out together. And when you get married, tell your darling husband, you are allowed to make a mistake. Promise. Ajahn Brahm told me, even get a piece of paper, you're allowed to, and wife, you're allowed to make mistakes. So you can really relax in life. And understand, trust people, they're trying to do their best. Each one of you, come on, you really are trying hard to do your best in life. When you go to work, you try to do the best for the company. You sometimes make mistakes, but you know, trust people, they really want to do their best. And most people are like that. Even these guys I've seen in jail, in prison, give them a chance. And they want to do good. They're trying to do the best in their life, but sometimes the odds are stacked against them, and it's so difficult. But they, underneath, they really want to do good. They want to be nice people. It's just so tough doing it. You know, a whole society is pushing them, you know, in the opposite direction. So when you actually trust a person, allow them to make mistakes, they don't make so many. They're not afraid. And it's that fear, guilt, punishment. That's the sort of stuff which messes up your life and other people's lives. That is bad karma. Making mistakes is not bad karma. Being afraid is. Getting angry is bad karma. Getting guilty, that is bad karma. Blaming is bad karma. Accepting, embracing, compassion, learning, looking at these things as shit, digging them in, that's good karma. And I don't think you need to have faith in that. I think you can all understand it. And you can try it out, and my goodness, it really, really works. Try that out with your kids. I don't know, they may have got their results from their year 12 exams or other exams. Please don't ever sort of blame your kids. Stupid kid, terrible kid, bad kid. You made too many mistakes in your exams. Oh, come on, that just makes them just really feel so guilty and so terrible. That may have happened to you in your life. How does that feel? You feel so rejected, you feel a failure, and you're only sort of 17 years of age, you're already a failure in life. Terrible thing to be. No, just really build them up. That's why I give you tricks to build them up. If your kid in year 12 has just got their exam results, if they came in the top 5% or the bottom 5%, they're bad Buddhists. They're not good Buddhists. Because what do Buddhists believe in? Middle way, yeah. So they come in the middle somewhere, you're a really good Buddhist. In the middle, the big ordinary people in the middle there, they are the best. The people come in the top 5%, so a bit weird, aren't they? Bottom 5%, a bit weird. No, they're not. Whatever. You're well done. You worked really hard. If you've got all those good marks, well done. Enjoy it. You deserve it. If you haven't got those good marks, well done. There's sort of, you know, more shit for your garden. Embrace everything. So when we say it's mistakes, of course, that is where the problem comes. Guilt, fear, I don't want to make the mistake again. Makes you tense, which means you can't perform well. So the real karma I'm talking about is understanding it's not what you're experiencing. You know, the difficulties, the problems, the happiness, the joy, whatever you're experiencing in life, is how you're experiencing it. That is the source of karma. That is where karma lives. So you're going through a divorce. That's part of life. It happens. How are you going through that divorce? How are you doing this? With anger, with guilt, thinking this is a big mistake in life? No. It's just, this is part of life. It's part of your life. Like being sick, there's nothing wrong with this. It happens. Learn from it. Grow from it. Become a better, but don't get into guilt and anger. That is a bad karma. You're going through another problem in life. You're getting a cancer or you have some death in the family. That's not bad karma. But if you really get into solid grief about this, into denial, into anger, why did this happen? Looking for somebody to blame, blaming yourself. I should have looked after my mum. Maybe I should have gone and called the doctor earlier. That sort of stuff, that's bad karma. It's the way you relate to life. Not life itself. Because the way life happens, you just have to do a survey. You know, people die. Is there anything wrong with dying? Is there anything wrong with cancer? It's part of life. We accept, embrace. If it hurts, shit, we're going to make something out of this. If you're having a great time, wonderful, we enjoy it. But guilt, anger, denial, blaming, especially blaming ourselves, that is the problem. That is the bad karma. That is the cause for most of the misery in this life. Look, when you think it's a bad, that's why people don't get checked up in time. Because they're afraid. They think it's bad, it's terrible. That's why people just get so into denial when someone's close to death. We think, no, they can't die. They're too young to die, they're only 90. That was, I collect all these quotes. There's this quote of a person who was 90 years of age, never had much sickness in their life in the United States. I mean, these are the quotes which I always collect. One of the healthiest people you can imagine. They went to have a checkup when they were in their early 90s. They discovered a tumor, and they came out of the hospital saying, "Why me?" 90 years of age, you got away with it. And now you say, "Why me?" But that's actually what we'd all say, isn't it, if we don't really understand the law of karma. The law of karma is happening right now. You are making your future right now by the attitude you have to what's happening in your life. You say, this is wrong. There's something wrong with me. I'm sick. There's something wrong with me. The relationship's not working out. There's something wrong with me. My sort of career's not going well. That is a bad karma there. The attitude you have to what happens in life. The good karma, this is happening. Now, how can I learn with this? How can I deal with this? Let's make something out of this. It's like a very simple saying, which when I read it, I think as a student, it's an old Chinese saying. I wrote it down and I remembered this for the rest of my life. The old Chinese saying, it's better to light a candle than complain about darkness. It's a very beautiful little, very simple saying, which encapsulates all which I've taught this evening. It's better to light a candle than complain about darkness. So whatever you want to complain about in life, your husband, your wife, your kids, your mother-in-law, people actually did point this out, your father-in-law, I can't be sexist anymore. Not just mothers-in-laws, fathers-in-laws, monks, nuns, whatever it is. Instead of complaining, light a candle. And that's an amazing thing. There's always many candles around to light. There's always something you can do. Something positive. And sometimes just embracing and learning. Sometimes people ask you, what is the meaning of life? Such a simple answer to a very deep question. It's learning, it's growing. Life is work in progress. Your life, your progress. How are you growing? I don't mean just growing sort of in size or in your bank account or whatever. I'm growing in size. But that's only, I have to grow in size to accommodate my heart, which is growing and growing and growing. And growing. The compassion. So now I'm talking about you growing your wisdom and growing compassion. You're growing your understanding of life. And of course that is the meaning of life. And I think you don't need to believe that. You understand that. So in the past year, how much have you learnt? How much have you grown? How much a wiser, kinder person have you become? That's the meaning of life. So how do you become wise? How do you become kind? How do you understand things? Right now is where you do this. This is where you build the happiness, even the health, and the compassion, the wisdom, and everything in life. This is where karma is made. Right now. And understanding that, you don't only know the meaning of life, you know the secret of life. Where it's hidden. People look for the secret of life in the future. With all your plans and expectations of what you're going to achieve next, where you're going to go, you look for the secret there. You never find anything. You look for the secret in the past, searching over all the things which have ever happened to you, trying to find meaning from, you know, from the mistakes of the past. You never find anything except just anger and guilt and negativity. You only find the meaning of life right now. This is where the secret is. The secret is not a book. The secret is in this moment here, absolutely for free. Remember this Zen teacher. She wrote this book, and I love the cover, the title of the book. She called it Selling Water by the River. It's a very beautiful title, Selling Water by the River. I think it's an old Zen story. It's stupid, isn't it? You know, there's a river there. Get your own water. But still, you know, sharp people, do you want some water? Do you want some water? That's why we don't sell anything here, because, you know, I feel terrible selling things. Because it's all for free. It's right here, right now, available for you. Truth is like the air. No one can own it. Not Buddhism, not Christianity, not Islam, not philosophy, not atheism. No one can own the air. We all share it. You can pollute the air, as people can pollute truth. But still there's enough truth out there. It just needs to be breathed in. It's right there in front of your nose. The truth of now. That is how I understand karma. So thank you for listening to this talk. Now, all those people in the far reaches of the universe, any questions, please SMS them. But first of all, our local crowd, is there any questions about the talk this evening? Okay, we're going to get some questions from the internet, from Ian Turnett. Okay, and we can see where this is from. That's why I finished a bit earlier, so we can get the international questions, and also from you guys as well.
Yes, okay, and if anybody here that would like to ask a question, certainly encourage you to do that, but if you wouldn't mind just to wait for the roving microphone that will come to you. But if you just put your hand up if you've got a question, and we'll come to you with the microphone, and then everything will run seamlessly. Again, Brahm Agnes from Dubai has asked, how do you motivate people who have no will to live?
How do you motivate people who have no will to live? Well, look, if you want to sort of teach them about reincarnation, so like you live here, if you die here, you just get reborn again anyway, so you can't get out of life that easy. So, if there was an easy way, I'd have taken it years ago. So here you are, instead of having the will to live, just having the will to be compassionate and to be kind. So if you could actually say about life and say, because the will to live is the fear of the future, and they just had enough and they can't see any positivity or any hope. And hopefully the talk which I've given this evening was actually saying, you know, just, look, there's nothing wrong with life. Life has always been like this, you know, if you read history, it's always been pretty much the same. You know, years ago, I hadn't read a newspaper for a couple of years when I was in Thailand. That seemed longer than about 4 or 5 years. I hadn't seen any newspaper. When I saw my first newspaper after 4 or 5 years break, I realized all the stories were exactly the same. They just change the names of the countries, the names of the people, but the storyline were always the same. You know, violence, wars, sex, you know, corruption, exactly the same. So the world has never changed. It's just people's attitudes. So see if we can change our attitude towards our life, and then we can find it very rich. And it's so rich, we never really want to give it away. So I don't know if that answers your question in Dubai, but you know, certainly the will to live is actually the will to be kind. Sometimes they ask, you know, what actually motivates you, Ajahn Brahm? And it's just, that is hardly any motivation there at all. It's just being. Because the will to live, you know, it's just, what do you mean a will to live? Just take away the will to live, the will to die, the will to go anywhere and just be. It's much more fun when you don't have any plans. Anyway, hopefully that makes any some sense.
Thank you, Ajahn Brahm. I hope that satisfies Agnes. And Rangba from Germany, this is a really curly one for you, Ajahn, and a little bit off the topic, but how can animals improve their karma?
How can animals improve their karma? There's one of my friends over in Melbourne, now that's Priya Mendes, and she got this big dog. And it was a Labrador, wasn't it? And when I saw it, I said, what's its name? And she gave it the name, she's a doctor, she gave it the name Chemo. Chemo, the dog. Well, that's a really weird name. Why do you name it Chemo? She said, because I'm training this dog to be one of these dogs who goes into wards with people who are very, very sick. Because we all know that if you take a little dog or a cat or a rabbit into a ward where people are very sick, just being able to pet that dog, to stroke it, have this beautiful soft animal in there, the compassion which a small animal or even a big animal generates amongst human beings has a very strong positive effect on people's recovery. They actually get better. And having a beautiful dog to play with in the ward, it makes you sort of, it gets up all your, what's it called, not serotonin, all these endorphins, all this beautiful health things in your body. You all know better than I do. But, you know, it really works. So that's why she called her dog Chemo, because it was short for chemotherapy. That was a little joke. She's a good student of mine, has got a stupid sense of humour, just like me. So Chemo the dog. And of course that dog went into so many wars in its life, healing people, helping people. That dog must have made huge amounts of good karma just by generating compassion in other beings. So that's how animals make good karma. They can be just so kind and so loving and so trusting. These beautiful qualities, and you see that in a little dog or in a cat. And they remind you of how to be kind. The dog never gets angry at you or upset at you, usually. And why is it you have a dog and they're just so nice, and you get a wife? It's so much trouble. Why? I said that because I said husbands before, so now it's just wives. Why can't human beings be much more like animals in that sense? Totally trusting. Your dog, your cat trusts you 100%. And is so forgiving of you. You know, if you miss a meal or something, yeah, the dog will be a bit upset, but will forgive you. And still will come and sit on your lap afterwards. Now, can your sort of your wife, your husband do that? Wouldn't it be wonderful if that was it? So that's how animals can make really good karma. A teaching about kindness, about love, about trust. And I used to teach people in Thailand. I said, look, at least dogs, they keep 3 of the 5 precepts. They keep 3. Dogs don't usually kill. Stealing? No. Adultery? No. They can't stop themselves. But have you ever seen a dog lie? And have you ever seen a dog drink alcohol? So
So I said, these dogs keep 3 precepts. There's some human beings that can't keep any of the 5 precepts. So you see, the dogs actually can make much better good karma than many of the other people. So I never seen a dog lie. I never seen a dog get drunk. And all dog talk things. So these dogs keep some precepts. So you see, they can make good karma. And also, have you ever seen dogs meditating? Or cats meditating? No, sometimes they sit next to you and they're incredibly peaceful. And so some of those cats, they can sit for hours and hours and hours and hours. Much longer than you can. So maybe those cats are closer to enlightenment than we really think. Okay, carry on before I get into more trouble.
Thank you, Ajahn Brahm. Sati from Boulder, Colorado asks, what are some basic daily practice a layperson should do?
The daily practice is to start now. So, yeah, just be kind, be compassionate. So it doesn't matter what you do, how you do it is really important. So you may be just driving to work in the morning. How are you driving to work? Are you listening to the radio and just, you know, getting yourself all upset? When you're on the way to work, are your mind already at work? A daily practice when you drive to work is every time you get to the stop sign, remember that's the Buddha teaching you. Stop. Be peaceful. Come into the present moment. Be here. So all the stop signs which you see around the cities of the world, that is the Dhamma. That is the teaching. Reminding you, stop and be here rather than always moving, moving, moving. So that's one of the nice daily practices. And the other daily practice, Emperor's Three Questions. Now is always the most important time. The person in front of you, always the most important person. So in Boulder, Colorado, the person right in front of you right now, and every moment of your life, give them importance. And the only thing to do is to care. The Emperor's Three Questions, that's all you really need to know about life. Now the most important time. The one you're with is the most important person. And the only thing to do in life is to care. Doesn't matter what you're doing. Working, at home, by yourself. If you're by yourself, you are the most important person because that's the one you're with. Caring for yourself and caring for others and caring for life. That's all we really need. That is your daily practice. You can say, oh, to sit meditating for half an hour, to do chanting, you know, to do charity work for half an hour. That doesn't really sort of cut much ice. Nothing to do. Is that the right cut much ice? I don't know, but it doesn't really work. What really does work is developing the right attitude to whatever you have to do in life. That should be your daily practice, developing the right attitude to whatever you have to do. Okay.
So is there any further questions from the room here?
Okay. Where are you from? We've already got from Boulder, we've got from Dubai, and we've got from Germany. And this is Eddie from Willerton.
Shelley,
I've crossed enough, yeah. Shelley is a suburb of Perth, yeah.
Ajahn Brahm, you know, this karma, well, for me, okay, it could be like God's judgment, you can call it too, okay, yeah. You see, there's a tendency for people, when there's problem, you know, to blame it on, when there's no way, like they can't think of anything, they blame it on karma, okay? Yeah. But there are certain instances yourself, okay? Yeah, yeah. Certain, yeah. Like you could, how do I say, it's a personal thing, you can link it, you know, could it be that I've done this something wrong in my earlier life?
Oh, yeah.
If you only yourself would know. But most people, oh, you know, like, oh, punishment by God, this thing, oh, my karma, you know, yeah. It's easy to blame on that, isn't it? But in certain instances, you know, like, only you would know, and you can link it, oh, could it be that? And that's also a learning process, you know.
It's always a learning process. The word which is really rankles with me is punishment. Look, if there ever was a God, they wouldn't punish anybody. High beings would never punish anybody. Why? Because high beings have just got love and compassion. love and compassion forgives. It will never be able to punish anybody. And it's really hard for me sometimes, as you know, as an abbot. You know, I just can't get my head around punishing anybody. So I'm pretty slack sometimes, and I should be saying, "You stupid, get out!" We just can't do it. And you know, I'm not sort of, you know, God, but you know, a high being. There's no way you can ever punish anybody. Impossible. The whole idea of punishment goes against compassion. It's an antithesis towards, you know, compassion and kindness. It's love which teaches people, forgiveness which makes them grow. Punishment creates fear, hides the problem. People never admit to what they've done. They deny anything which has happened. They spin, they just don't admit to the truth. Fear of punishment. And there is never any truth. Punishment actually hides the truth. Forgiveness brings the truth up so we can understand it and learn from it. So that's why even it may be connected to something you've done in the past, but it's not punishment for what you've done in the past. It's just cause and effect. Yeah, this has led to this, so it means there's still things you have to learn. You still need some more shit in your garden. That's why you get another delivery. So that's actually how I understand it. But please, the main point is, look, think about it. If you're really kind, if you really got compassion, how can you punish anybody? And it does not work. Ask any psychologist. Someone's made a mistake. I've made a mistake. I just want someone to understand me. I was trying. Please believe in me. Trust in me. I'm trying. I'm making a mistake, okay? When somebody comes and believes in me and they trust me and they say, look, never mind. You know, just, you know, I'm behind you. I'm there to support you. Other people might sort of put you down and criticize you, but not me. And you feel just, alas, somebody understands. And that makes you try even harder to be better. You actually do grow from forgiveness. Try it and see. Forgive your kids. Forgive your partner in life, no matter what they've done. They will grow as you would hope to be forgiven by the people who love you. That's what we have lovers for. A lover is someone who understands us very deeply and profoundly. Understands us enough to know the importance of forgiveness. So there's somebody I can go to who loves me so much, and whatever I've done, the door to their heart is always open to me. I had a father like that. That's why I loved him so much. That's why I hopefully became a really good person, because he trusted me 150,000,000,000%. Okay. Oh, it's 9 o'clock, so that's pretty good. So shall we have some announcements now, Dennis? Because that's...
Thank you, Ajahn Brown.
4 questions today, 3 from overseas, 1 from here. Exciting, isn't it? Getting all these questions from around the world.
I would like to tell you tonight about the introduction to meditation class that's going to be starting again tomorrow. As you know, our Buddhist Society runs introductory classes once a month. They run for 4 weeks, and the first one for this month of January will be beginning tomorrow in the room next door. So if you're interested yourself to come along and learn some introductory meditation, please come along, and if you know someone that might be interested, please tell them to come along tomorrow at 3 o'clock, Saturday afternoon, tomorrow the 7th. Just also like to let you know that little fundraising exercise that we had over the month of December to raise funds for the Bangladesh orphanage raised a total of $5,100, which we're very pleased about. More funds over the year will go into that bank account. We have a separate bank account for that orphanage, but that was certainly a really good kick along for us to be able to send the money over when we do that each year. We're also looking for some volunteers tomorrow at 1 o'clock that can help just package up and post our newsletter, The Enlightened Times, will be posted out tomorrow. So Lucky is looking for one or two volunteers just to give her a hand, just in folding those up and putting them in their envelopes. So if anyone can do that, 1 o'clock tomorrow afternoon, we would like you to come along. I'd also just like now to draw your attention to this conference that's going, this conference called Buddhism and Australia, that's going to be run in Perth from the 2nd to the 4th of February. So it's very close. I know this is a very well-run conference. It's been run in many places around the world. The emphasis on it is really towards academics. And I think the hope is really to encourage academics to look at Buddhism and perhaps even to find different ways to experiment with it, and looking at ways to just to bring Buddhism into the academic world. But beyond that, Ajahn Brahm will certainly be, I think, one of the.
Involved, and I'm not an academic anymore, so there'll be Ajahn Bamali is giving some talks there as well. Ajahn Sujata as well.
They have actually an excellent lineup of monks that are coming from right around the world, so it would be a very interesting conference to go to. So if anyone's interested, the 2nd to the 4th of February, and yes, it is all free, of course.
Yes, it's at Murdoch University.
Murdoch University. Did I say Curtin then, did I?
Yeah, I don't know, but it's at Murdoch.
At Murdoch University. I would also just like to let you know that Ajahn Brahm's Easter retreat from the 5th to the 14th of April will be starting next, with the
bookings
for registrations will be opened at next, the 13th of January. Is that next Friday?
Yeah.
13th of January. So there we are. For anyone that wants to, this is for full members. We'll be open from the 13th of January, from the 20th of January for others. I know these retreats fill up very, very quickly. So I'm just letting everyone know, and also the people that are listening around the world as well, that are members of our society. The 13th of January for Ajahn Brahm's retreat, for the opening for bookings. Ajahn Brahmali's Sutta retreat from the 2nd to the 4th of March, the opening for registrations for that will be the 27th of January. Now, I've also just been asked to let everybody know that there will be a weekend retreat at Jhana Grove from February the 10th to the 12th. And teachings will be the talks from the January 9-day retreat that Ajahn Brahm will be giving. So there will be a weekend retreat for anybody that would like to go along to that. For info on how to register, check out the poster on the notice board, or they can come and see me, which is Danya, who looks after the Jhana Grove Retreat Centre. She's outside tonight?
Yes,
there she is waving.